What's up? It's Andy Grammer with Jag.
Hi, this is Carly Rae Jepsen, and you're listening to Jag.
Hi, everybody. It's Joe Jonas hanging with Jag.
This is Heather Knox, Playboy's Miss January 2012.
With the hottest Jag I've ever seen.
It's B.O.B. checking in with my homie Jag. So much swag with my homie Jag.
It's the Jag Show Podcast.
Welcome into episode number 6 of the Jag Show. My guest today is someone who has been a very dear friend to me over the years, and I first met him in 2004. You know, when you're starting out in any career, you need somebody to take a chance on you. And Dave Ryerson hired me in my first full-time radio gig at 92.1 KISS FM in Burlington, Vermont in 2004. I had a resume tape that I'd put together from my college radio station. I had worked a year off the air part-time. Dave liked what he heard on the tape and was willing to take a chance on me and bring me up to Burlington. So would not be where I am today if not for him. With that, I say welcome to the Jag Show, Dave.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. It's been a lot of fun from hiring you to watching your career, how it took off, the work you did, how you've grown as a talent. And listen, I'm humbled to say that I was able to be a small part in that because you really had a magnificent career and developed into quite the on-air talent.
I really appreciate that, Dave. So what's very interesting about Dave is when I met him 14 plus years ago, you know, he had been a rock radio DJ. He was into programming, taking his shot at programming Top 40. And from there, a man of the cloth. He now runs his own congregation in Northern Michigan. So I want to kind of go through your journey today, Dave, and see how you got from point A to point Z almost, you know, with such an interesting process from where you were then to where you are now. So I guess I'll start by asking just to sort of take us through it.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you a quick little side story kind of along that. Next weekend, I'm actually going to be doing a wedding in the Twin Cities. A friend of mine that I worked on rock radio with, boy, in 2000, right? Mm-hmm. And he back then had said, hey, when I get married, I want to do my wedding. And we were in rock radio back then. I wasn't thinking pastor or anything like that, right? And so here we are 18 years later, and he's getting married now for the first time, and I'm a pastor. And so, but the funny thing is, I was describing that to another friend because I said, well, I'm doing a friend's wedding. And he said, oh, are you DJing it? And I'm like, no, I'm pastoring it. Really, I could do both.
Yeah, like a 2-for-1 deal, 2 services in one.
That's about it. Saving some money. I mean, you know, it's a funny thing, Jag, if you allow me to, I'll go back even to the beginning. Like, my grandpa was a pastor.
Okay.
And when I was first born, and I got a ton of male cousins, but he said to my mom, he's the one. Just knew.
Huh.
And my whole life, I've kind of always felt this call to being a pastor. But trust me, man, that's a call you run from. You know what I'm saying? So I was, you know, a stupid college kid. I actually did a year of pre-seminary, and that just wasn't it for me. And I, you know, sat down one day and I was all like, man, I don't know what to do with my life. My mom's like, why don't you get into radio? And it was like, you know, that proverbial, the clouds opened up and the ray shines down on you and you hear the, like that, you know, it's like, yeah, radio.
That's interesting that, you know, your mom would suggest that to you, given, you know, the state of the industry. And it's funny that she would say that.
It is interesting because my grandpa on my dad's side, grandpa, my dad, and my sister are all lawyers. So I've got like 3 generations of lawyers in the family. And my mom tells me to be the DJ, tells you what she thinks of me.
You know, why don't you just go do this? I don't think this other stuff's going to be for you. Why don't you go play on the radio?
That was about it, you know? But I'm telling you, man, it was like, yeah, like it was, you know, how many of us as kids, and I suppose, you know, younger audiences aren't going to get this. Probably the same difference, though. You can run a, you know, an MP3 recorder or something like that. But we used to talk into a tape player or something like that, and we'd play DJ.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of those kids that did that. And so the thought of like, whoa, you could do this for real was kind of an interesting thought. I mean, how many parents tell the kids you should be like a rock star? You know, they usually don't. Those are kind of stupid dreams that are wasted careers.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very interesting in that aspect. You know, so I did that. I got into that and did the whole small town radio, try to work your way up thing. I did active rock radio, did an active rock morning show. Frankly, I've done morning shows my whole career. And so people kind of give you funny looks. I'm like, yeah, I was the heavy rock station morning show DJ. You know, and I went from there into Top 40. I actually did some classic rock, did some Top 40. And it was at the point of Top 40 when it was weird, man. You and I were on the station together when AIM first came out, if you remember that, AOL Instant Messenger. And you remember how many, you know, messages we get? The screen would be blowing up and all these kids. And we get all these messages from kids and they'd be talking about this, you know, hey, my boyfriend with this and I've been doing this and like stuff that I'm like, man, I don't agree with that, but it's not my place to get all religious on them. But right. Here I am playing music that's completely feeding into it.
Sure. I mean, this, and keep in mind, this is 2004, 2005. So this is Nelly Hot in Here in 2002. This is, you know, Usher, Yeah, the song that may have saved Top 40 Radio that came out around then. You know, Lil Jon, Get Low with some really, you know, questionable lyrics in that song. That paint the picture. That's really, you know, the music that we were playing at that point.
Well, and actually, and the one that really stuck out to me at the time was Jaquan with Tipsy. He's
Jaquan
himself. Was 17 years old.
Talking about going to the club and getting tipsy.
Yeah. And of course, that was, you know, I started right after Fitties, you know, and the club was out. But, you know, so all these songs, and I'm kind of like, man, this goes against a lot of what I believe. And it's not that I was, like, trying to push religion on kids, but you got kids that are like, hey, I'm struggling with this and this, and I'm playing music that's feeding into it. And it kind of convicted me. I was like, man, I'm having a hard time doing this now.
That is really fascinating to me, Dave, that going into this discussion, I was thinking that you might have some conflict doing active rock radio and just kind of, you know, rocking out the rock star lifestyle and how that would conflict with any religious beliefs you have. But it was actually the Top 40 side that gave you more internal strife. I find that fascinating.
Well, and I think some of it probably was an age thing as well, because when I was doing the active rock radio, and actually, you know, I was in active rock at the time when that was, you know, my station was number one in its market, 12 plus. There were some other rock stations. I remember Kansas City, the rock station there was number one, 12 plus. You know, rock was big at the time. You know, Nickelback was out, Creed, you had Kryptonite from Three Doors Down. You know, that blew up in like every format possible. And rock was a big thing back then. But see, I was younger then, I think, and so more kind of edgy. And by the time I was in Top 40, you know, I was 30 by that point. I was thinking about kids. So you kind of start growing up a little bit. I don't want to say anybody that's listening to Top 40 is immature or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But it's kind of like maybe you start prioritizing life a little different because suddenly I'm not going out partying as much anymore. And, you know, you kind of look at maybe you got some friends that are still living that life. And you're like, dude, you got to grow up. You know what I mean? You kind of start seeing the negative side of that stuff too.
You know, when you're really preaching to the choir, no pun intended on that one. But, you know, for me, my last Top 40 job here in Detroit, I got married while I was at that job, and going out to the club every Friday and Saturday night, that was a different lifetime for me. That was 10 years ago. I would come home to my girlfriend, then fiance, then wife, yes, all the same person, and watch a movie or watch Food Network. Like, I was too old to be living that life, so I know exactly what you mean.
And that does, it changes kind of how you see things. And then again, you know, I'd always kind of had these religious convictions in me. So in kind of seeing that as well, I'm just like, man, I'm having a hard time doing this. And it was interesting because, you know, I was over at my church. My wife and I were the youth group leaders. And it wasn't because I was like an overly spiritual, active church guy. It was because we were the young couple without kids. So instantly you get deemed, you're the new youth leader. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so that was us. But it was funny. I was at church one day, the day before Valentine's Day, February 13th. And we're you know, getting the stuff ready for this project we're doing with our youth kids for Valentine's Day at the church. And I get a text from my former boss in Sioux Falls, who's now the VP of media for Northwestern. It's this group of Christian radio stations, mostly in the Midwest. And they got a bunch of big cities, big markets. He's the VP there now. And he goes, hey, I got an opening at our station in Sarasota, Florida. I want you going there. And I'm like, what? You know, never even given it a second thought. I never even thought of Christian radio. I didn't know it existed. I'll be honest with you. I didn't even know it existed.
Okay.
And so I'm like, you know, but he's like, you know, one of the most influential people in my life, a dear mentor. And it was kind of like, hey, you know what? That would be radio with a purpose. Again, not taking a dig at anything else, but I'm feeling that in life. I'm being convicted by what I'm broadcasting. I want what I believe in values to be, you know, not kind of hidden or tucked away or selling out those values, you know? And so I'm like, maybe this is something to look into. And I flew down to Florida, interviewed for the gig, and just was like, yeah, this is the direction I need to go now.
And I think at this point, Dave, we should clear up a little bit of a misnomer. And this is something that you taught me as you got into this branch of the field. Christian radio isn't all Bible thumping, God this, Jesus this. It's just more about positivity, right?
And that's what it is. You know, it's funny in the radio world now. You've probably heard of Mark Ramsey, one of the top kind of research guys. He actually, for years now, my network used to hire him out. He's for years been pushing for commercial stations, secular stations, to start actually imitating the Christian stations more. Huh. And Christian radio stations are much better at telling a story, and stories fascinate people, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's like, learn to tell your stories, learn to sell your values. You know, too many commercial stations are so caught up in sales promotions. It, really, every interaction with your listener is what we used to call transactional. It's kind of, I want something out of you, you'll get something out of me, and that's the end of the relationship, okay? In Christian radio, we like to refer to our interaction with our listeners as transformational. Like, there's something more is going to come out of this than just, here's a free t-shirt, thanks for coming out to visit us. You know, we want more out of it. But you get what I'm saying? There's a difference. You build these relationships with people. And so in going down there, you know, and Christian radio, listen, you know, has gone through a lot of changes. When I got there, my network still had some of that old school stuff. And it used to, a long time ago, live up to that misconception. Mm-hmm. But what had happened is our VP was trying to transform it into, listen, there's some pretty good bands that are coming out now. There's some pretty good music. It's no longer just this really cheesy stuff. Man, you can find some bad stuff on YouTube, you know, back how it used to be. But there's really good artists now. There's really good songs. And so let's start doing Christian radio as if we were doing good radio. But we're not, you know, in a sense, he took the change to the mentality of, we're not doing Christian radio. We're doing good radio that just happened to be targeting Christians, you know?
Do you feel like your experience in other formats, in active rock and classic rock and top 40, helped you when you got to Christian radio at kind of a transformational period?
You know, absolutely, man, because I had a zillion mentors in the industry, and I always learn. And man, listen, for anybody, I don't care what field you're in, find the best people in the field you're in and learn from them. Mm-hmm. Because that's how you yourself are going to get better. And I learned from all my mentors and stuff that it wasn't about like the tactics for programming good radio, because that stuff is kind of shallow without a point. It's doing good radio first. Like, if the tactics are driving you, you know what I mean? You're kind of shallow, but it's learning the philosophies. And so, yeah, I was able to really apply a lot of those philosophies in making sure I was focused on who's my audience. Basically, I programmed to the whole family. If you look at the age demographics, you know, between the son, the dad, the sister, then mom, you know, at the end of Christian radio. But the point of that was, you know, is it taught me to focus on who your audience is. Because like, if you stay in one format forever, you're going to run the risk of maybe becoming a fan of that format, and you end up programming a station to your liking. You know, it becomes your own favorite station, and that's a bad thing for a PD to have.
That's something that you taught me 14 years ago and stuck with me.
And you can tell if a radio station is a PD's favorite station. That's a bad thing. You want to remain totally objective. It really helped me in that. But you know, it's funny, Jag, it wasn't even being a Christian radio that made me a pastor. It was while I was in it, we were, you know, because we're owned by a college in the Twin Cities. And they offered up some free classes for the on-air people just to kind of help us with our knowledge and be a little better at what we're doing.
Okay.
And I just like, hey, four free college classes, why not? And the problem is I just never stopped taking classes. And then one day it hit me, I'm like, man, the only path this is leading down is pastor. I remember like turning to my wife saying, I'm going to be a pastor someday, like shocked.
You were the Van Wilder of Christian college classes.
Yes, that was about it. It's like, oh, this is leading somewhere. And so it was kind of crazy. I mean, really, that's how it came to be. It wasn't me just saying, oh, I'm now going to be a pastor. It was realizing, oh, wait, I'm going to be a pastor.
Wasn't that funny how that worked out?
Yeah, no kidding, huh?
At what point did you make that decision to make that move over, and kind of take me through that process?
Once I kind of figured it out, and I was in Sarasota for about 2.5 years, and then I moved back to Sioux Falls, had a really great promotion, good opportunity there. But when I took that job, I even told the station manager, hey, listen, you know, I got a long way to go for school, but my point is when I'm done with school, I'm going to transition into being a pastor. I'm going to quit. So in a sense, I gave him, you know, an eight-year notice, you know.
Right.
You know, and so he knew all along, too, that you don't have me forever kind of a thing. So I just kind of knew. So I kept doing radio, and I just kept doing school and internship and stuff like that, and just knowing what the end goal was. But just, you know how it is, though, loving radio until then, because it's just such a great industry.
You know, I've heard it described to me as a drug. Once it's in your veins, it's really hard to get out. And that's kind of why I've made the transition to podcasting, is I enjoy the craft of radio. So how does your career get started in being a pastor?
What happens is, as you get towards the end of schooling and stuff, churches start reaching out to you in your church body, if you will.
Okay.
I'm part of what's the AFLC, Association of Free Lutheran Congregations. And so you know, they have a coordinating committee that you meet with and stuff. And that committee then, you know, once they've kind of interviewed potential pastors, you know, will send out notices to churches, or churches will contact them that are looking for pastors, and they'll be like, why don't you call this guy? And so I had a few churches calling me. I was in South Dakota at the time, and a lot of the churches around there had openings. So I would kind of fill in there, and I was talking with a few at this time. And then this church out of I'm like, what is that? You know, Ishpeming, Michigan, but I couldn't even pronounce it at the time. And, you know, they call me, and I, you know, what happens is you'll come up to that church, you'll, what's called candidate there, you'll preach, and then you'll spend after the service kind of doing a Q&A with the congregation and tell us about you and stuff like that. And then, you know, you'll go back and life will resume, and then they'll kind of pray over it. And then if they feel you're the guy, they'll vote as a congregation whether to call you or not. And if the vote passes, then they'll send you what's called a letter of call. And it will be the details of, here's the job, here's the expectations, here's the salary, here's, you know, the package, you know, stuff like that. We ask you to pray over it and let us know in 30 days or so if you're going to take the call or not.
It's interesting, Dave, like, the comparison we've made here today is between the church and radio. For one thing, it seems a lot easier to get that kind of job because they're coming to you as opposed to you sending out 100 different tapes to radio stations.
You know, it's funny, in the AFLC alone, there's like 40 different openings for pastors. And so it's like, I can quit this job and have another one like right away, unlike radio, where it's like 2 million people lining up for any kind of a gig at all. And so, yeah, there is a huge contrast to that.
Like, for example, a midday DJ job in Burlington, Vermont, that in 2004 paid $19,000 a year. But anyway,
it's about the same.
What's really interesting to me that you just described is this Q&A with the congregation. So you're essentially auditioning for the job. Take me inside the room there. What kind of questions do they ask? What's the dynamic in that situation?
Every church probably is a little different depending on what their values are, what their concerns are. You know, sometimes I know those Q&A stuff can be based on, like, if they had an issue with a previous pastor.
So
basically, we want to avoid those type of situations again. You know, this one was pretty easy. It was more just kind of like, you know, how would you, you know, see yourself running a church? You know, explain to us how you've handled difficult situations in life. You know, it was actually pretty laid back, pretty easy stuff. It didn't feel real like agenda oriented, you know, because you kind of want to sniff that out right away. It's like, are you guys trying to have me be somebody that I'm really not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that at all. They, in a sense, they kind of want to get to know you. It's like, hey, if you're going to be like our spiritual shepherd, if you will, we kind of want to know what you're like, you know, how you're going to shepherd us, if you will. And so it was kind of more like that kind.
How long of a meeting is this? Is it like 30 minutes? Is it 3 hours? I mean, it varies, I'm sure.
I think this one went about an hour and a half.
Okay.
You know, it's really as long as people have questions, and depending on how well the person being interviewed answers questions. Now, you and I are from a communications business. We usually don't have an issue answering questions.
Right, yeah. Okay, so, you know, in terms of radio people, and we both know hundreds, if not thousands, of radio people, and the gig is you move from city to city to city. You know, I was very fortunate in that, you know, instead of making a lot of interim jumps, I was able to make one big jump from Burlington, Vermont to Detroit, Michigan. But you've moved probably more than almost anybody I know from market to market to market. So it was probably second nature for you and your wife, Rachel, to move to Ishpeming, Michigan. But this time you're doing it with two kids, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's more challenging once kids get involved. And it was tough because, you know, the biggest part about moving kids, I think, you know, my son was 11, my daughter was 10. They got a network of friends. And
yeah.
So you're pulling them from that. And, you know, you yourself are up, you know, because I had lived in Sioux Falls before that for 8 years. And so in that span of time, you develop a lot of good friends, especially when you have friends around your age with all your kids that play together,
yeah,
you form really good relationships with them. And to leave that was pretty tough. So to me, the moving wasn't hard. I'm used to doing that, you know, packing up a vehicle and you know, and stuff like that. It was the uprooting of family from that root system, which you know, some of your identity comes from and your friends and stuff like that.
And it's funny, I think about the nomadic lifestyle that you've led. And I think the last time that I saw your wife, she was, what, 8 months pregnant with your son when you left Vermont to go down to Florida?
Yeah, and now he's going to be 13 this year.
Am I invited to the bar mitzvah?
Absolutely. But, you know, the funny thing is, going to be a pastor, the average pastor stays at a church for 3.5 years.
Really?
So I went into another completely nomadic field.
Tell me about Ishpeming, Michigan. I know I have a lot of listeners in Detroit that, you know, talk about going up north and how beautiful it is up there and how amazing it is up there. I mean, take me inside Ishpeming, Michigan a little bit. It's right outside Marquette, right, in the UP?
Yeah. We're 12 miles west of Marquette, up in the UP. Marquette being, you know, the quote-unquote big city up here, and that's about 25, 30,000 people. You know, both you and I coming from big cities, this is like, oof, man, this is small. But, you know, it's interesting. You come up here, and it was a big lifestyle change. Sioux Falls, South Dakota is either Sioux Falls and Fargo flip-flop between lowest unemployment in the country. Sioux Falls is in the top 50 for fastest growing cities in America. And while that may not sound that impressive for a town of, you know, 250,000 people, that's pretty impressive to be listed with the bigger names too, right? Mm-hmm. So you got this town, it's growing like crazy. There's like no unemployment. It's actually the big struggle up there is there's not enough people to hire. And then you come somewhere like this, which is a town that, you know, an area that was built on the mines all those years ago. And there's only one mine left, mine in the UP. And that's actually right around here. When I came up, the second one closed. So you have an area with a depressed economy. You know, the jobs aren't as prevalent. You know, it's very different in that sense. But on the other hand, you know, you look at, but there's, for a small town, there's a zillion things to do up here. Sure, you may not have the trendy restaurants or the club scene or anything like that, anywhere to go kind of catch a show. What you do have is just an endless supply of outdoor things to do. I mean, like endless. There's no way to be bored up here unless you hate nature. If you hate nature, you hate trees, then yeah, you're going to hate it up here. But if you like nature, there is something different to do every day, and it's all awesome.
I want to transition here, Dave, and ask how what you learned in marketing in terms of radio and communicating with an audience serves you in your current role as a pastor.
And I'm telling you, the parallels between the two industries is pretty alarming, actually. it is. I mean, I talk to a lot of people, I'm like, man, there's a lot in common. You don't get paid much, you move a lot, you know. But the thing that I find interesting is it's a product, and you're trying to build an audience for your product. So a radio station, it's, here's our product. How do we grow this? You know, you know, and some people cringe if I refer to God as a product, right? But as for like the church itself, the service itself, what we're about and everything, you know, I can refer to it as a product in the sense of this is like why people come. I like this church versus another church. Okay. Those kinds of things. And so what you have to do, and I learned early on, is the days of me standing up on a hill shouting, come to me. And you see that in the business world now, the business that still are under that mindset are failing miserably. It's how are you going out and building relationships in radio sense with your listeners, customers. You know, if you're sitting back waiting for them to come to you, you're going to be out of business real soon because somebody else is willing to go out after them.
It's the idea of going from cold calling to inbound marketing with all businesses and the transition that's been making. So your point is well taken.
Yeah. And it's because it's relationships. It's purely relational. And if you can build a relationship with somebody, you'll create a fan for life, you know, unless you violate that relationship. But I mean, outside of that, it's that's the whole goal is I'm going to go build relationships with people, creating a brand loyalty. And so, you know, that was always the mantra of my radio stations that we did. If you have two stations in a market that are playing the same type of a format, really what makes one better than the other? Okay, it's not the music because they're both playing the same thing. Imaging, for the most part, we as I think radio people get more excited about that than do listeners.
Yeah, to them, it's 3-second commercials in between songs.
That's about it. And so, you know, we can pat ourselves on the back because it sounds great. But the reality is what distinguishes one from another, and that is how well one is integrating itself in its community. How much is it building a relationship with its community? You know, there's good programming principles applied, but assuming all is the same in that, the one that's going to win is the one that's out making, building relationships more. And so really on a church, not to overly spiritualize this, but what really is the Bible all about is what's called the Great Commission, where Jesus tells disciples, go out and make disciples of all nations. Okay, so it's like, go out and basically build relationships for this purpose. And so like, that's been the call of the church forever. And so really, it's the same principles here of go out and build relationships to bring people in.
That's what I find fascinating is, you know, from the outside looking in, you are a rock DJ turned top 40 DJ, and now you've become a pastor. And while they seem like they're at such opposite ends of the spectrum, like you said, the similarities really are quite striking.
it's building an audience in a sense of, and I say this carefully and hopefully you understand the how I'm saying this, but like, you know, there's a bunch of other churches in the area. What distinguishes mine from the others? Okay. And, you know, I try not to do it that way. I'm trying not to, you know, unlike radio where you want to cherry pick, you know, take listeners or whatever, I'm trying not to cherry pick from other congregations. But
right.
Instead, it's more of a matter of what am I doing as a church to serve the purpose of the Great Commission, and in which case I'm going to do it to the best of our ability. And by doing that, we're out in our community, building relationships, building loyalty, you know, stuff like that, getting people to trust us, come to us. And again, that goes back to exactly how we always did radio and have great success doing it. And so, I mean, really, they're both an audience growth type of thing.
Have you had a moment, Dave, up there where you've just felt, I don't know if it's an aha moment or just a really fulfilling moment where something happened that really cemented and made you feel good about what you were doing, that this is your calling and this is what you should be doing?
You know, that's a great question. I haven't had the aha moments, but I've had the moments where actually, yeah, you know what there was. I was doing a funeral. So as odd as that sounds, okay, I was doing a funeral for a guy that had almost one of the first people to build my church 50 years ago. He was that guy. His fingerprints aren't everything. Something went wrong. Boom. He was there fixing it. He built stuff. I mean, he was great, right? Just the sweetest guy in the world.
Uh-huh.
And when he passed away, the opportunity to do a funeral at a time when people are at their saddest, to be able to get up and say, you know, without sounding corny or cliched, like, this is kind of a celebration because this guy lived for this moment. He lived for this reason that he has this hope of this, you know, eternal life that he's now experiencing. And so to kind of like realize this is really kind of a great thing. And the family saw it too. It wasn't like this horribly grieved situation. And, but so to be able to share that with the family, like this was a life well lived, you know what I'm saying? Like a life lived with purpose, because how many of us live lives where we just kind of exist? And frankly, to me, that's probably the worst form of life there is, when you just exist. You know, I'm just going to suck in oxygen, exhale it, and all I do is consume resources. I mean, live with a purpose. And he lived with his purpose of, he knew what he wanted. He knew what he believed. He's lived his life for it. And now he's received that, you know? And somebody that doesn't believe is going to look at that and say, well, whatever, he's dead now. But if you do believe, you know, what we believe, then it's like, yeah, but he's now received this eternal inheritance that he's lived for. And so it was really great to be a part of that and be a part of people that though they're still mourning and sad, they're also rejoicing in that.
That's a great story. Dave, what are some of the challenges that you deal with on a day-to-day basis or on a bigger picture basis in the role that you're in now?
You know, it's like all things. I don't mean this in a bad way, because actually I have it probably easier than most pastors I know, but probably your biggest challenge, and this is the biggest thing I learned as being a pastor, is it's all about people. It's a 100% people job, which is funny because, as you know me, I don't like people. And why did I get into a people job? But it's 100% about people. And as you know, people are self-centered. By nature, we think about ourselves, right? We
sure.
People are, you know, you and I think struggle with this as radio guys. We've been program directors. Here we are looking at research, which is objective. Yet you got somebody telling you, you need to be doing this. But my research tells me I don't need to be, you know? And so you deal with people who have their preferences. A lot of times it's arbitrary, it's subjective. And you're kind of like, that's not part of the big picture. Well, then they get upset because you're not, you know? So you deal with the brokenness of people. But I knew that getting into it, because you think about it, you know, the Bible teaches us, you know, that we are as people kind of sinful and stuff like that. Like, we're kind of selfish and self-centered. And so guess what? You're stepping into that and dealing with that every day. So I have it pretty easy here. But the reality is that's probably, you know, the big struggle are when people are like, well, why are we doing it this way? Because that's not how we're doing it. You know what I mean?
What do you measure success on? Is it number of people that are at your services? Is it one-on-one connections? Is it all of the above? What metrics do you use, or does your congregation and your church use, to say, okay, Dave's doing a good job?
You know, that's a great question that I think a lot of churches are struggling with, okay? The radio side of me says it's about numbers. How many people are coming on a Sunday? You know what I mean? That's purely it. That's our QM, as we called it, radio.
What's your total audience? Yeah.
Yeah, what's my total audience, right? Now, the pastor side of me says, it's not about who's sitting in here. It's about who's truly living this out, you know? I don't want the bench warmers here where I'm punching in. All right, I did my church for the week. Now I'm done until next week, right? Because there's a lot of that, trust me.
It's like Christians who only show up for Christmas and Easter, or Jews like myself who sometimes are only going to a temple on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Well, and that's about it. And especially, you know, listen, because as a guy, you know, who had this big life change for me, kind of what got me going, why, you know, I'd gone back to school way back in the day when I said they offered classes is, I've always been a Christian, but I was kind of like, why am I? Like, have I actually really looked into this, you know? Mm-hmm. Or do I just believe because that's just how it was as a kid, and so that's just how it is, right? So for me, going to school and like, this has really kind of transformed me and been like, man, this stuff is so incredible to live out. And so part of it is when you see people just doing the 60 minutes a week, it's like, you're really missing out on this really cool transformation that happens in you. It's less like you want to shake them and be like, oh, you're not living up to what you're supposed to be. More, it's like you're really missing out on why this is so incredible, why this is so life-changing. And so that's why I struggle with that. So it's a hard measurement because, yeah, I want more people. We've actually had really great growth here in the last year. But on the flip side, are these people growing spiritually? I'd rather have them growing spiritually than have big numbers, but I'm also human. I have the ego side. Big numbers helps too.
Right. You know, I think there are a lot of misconceptions about people in your role. You know, it's like, okay, well, he's an extension of God. This is the real religious guy. I can't be too loose around him. But you and I, you know, have bonded over the years talking about radio, talking about football, quoting the movie Office Space. Do you feel like there's a misconception that people only see the one side of you because of what you do for work versus the other parts of you as a person?
Yeah, absolutely. I was a couple months back, I was in a hospital room and with this family and the, you know, their dad had passed away. He was in his 90s and his doctor had come in and he was really rude and stuff. And as he left, one of the girls kind of uttered an obscenity under her breath. And about 30 seconds later, she turned around and goes, oh, I'm sorry, Pastor. I didn't know you were still here. And I'm like, girl, I worked in rock radio. I was thinking the same thing, you know? but the number of people that will kind of do that, they might drop out a four-letter word. Oh, I'm sorry, Pastor. I'm like, seriously, you know, and it's, you know, listen, you heard my mouth I used to have back in the day, all right? I'm trying to work on that stuff. But, you know, if anything, I try to stand up on Sundays and preach, in a sense, the struggles that I'm going through too. Like, I don't stand up there and look down at you people, right? You know, it's kind of, hey, man, we're in this together. And life is hard enough as it is. And so I'm by no means a perfect person. And, you know that. And, I know that all too well. So there's kind of this misconception that I have to be good around the pastor. Probably the struggle is too. It's hard to make friends because people still treat you like the pastor.
Right.
And so you don't get the full honest them. You get how they think they're supposed to be around you.
Makes sense.
And so it is tough to have like really close friendships from people in your congregation. I mean, they're wonderful. They invite you to all the family things, but you never feel like you could open up and be vulnerable with somebody because they kind of give you like funny book of, you know what? You know, that's that area of misconception that we ourselves are perfect or that we're judging or condemning everybody. And you know, listen, there can be some hose bags that are kind of that way. But for the most part, it's like, we're just trying to get through this together, you know?
What is unique about the job where you do it? I mean, obviously, it's not going to be the same in Ishpeming, Michigan as it is in New York City or anything like that. But what do you find unique about the particular area that you're in?
You know, what's interesting is the fact that because it's a small town here, you still have the pastor is involved in all aspects of family. So you're going to kids' basketball games and you know, softball games. You're going to graduations. You know, you're still almost expected at all those things. Nobody, you know, puts it on you in a harsh way, but you know, you're absolutely invited for that. And if you show up, they'll take you around and introduce you to everybody. Even when I lived in Sioux Falls, which isn't, you know, a major city, but it's 250,000 people, it certainly wasn't that way with the pastors. You know what I mean? And it was, and in big cities, it was never that way. But here, it still very much is kind of that old school mentality of just, oh, you know, pastor, you got to make sure we got a big family event coming. And so, you know, you got to come there too. Like family reunions, you'll be there. And you're like, I don't even know anybody here.
And I would imagine that's a strain on your time because you've got a family at home. You've got a wife and two kids. How has the transition into this role been for your family?
You know, it's been actually easier. There is some of that stuff. But on the other hand, when there is nothing going on, you don't feel bad about. Like, you know, when I first started here, you know, my elder board sat down, well, we'd like you in the office from 9 to noon every day. Mm-hmm. And outside of that, you know, obviously, you know, they want you kind of reading and studying or doing other things. But they realize, too, like, you know, first off, you got to have a healthy family. You know how it is. When you're at odds with Ellen, you're struggling for the day. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And you can't shake that kind of stuff. So if I'm at odds with the family, that's going to affect my ministry here. Also, if, you know, with my kids are happy, then they're more engaged and involved. And also, if I'm up to kind of preach about family and the importance of God and family and stuff, but they're taxing all my time, then they're being hypocritical about it. And they don't want to be. They have made it very clear that my family comes first and the congregation comes second. And they've really not pushed that. I mean, yeah, again, there's times when the taxes, but everybody has busy seasons, but it's kind of one of those outside the busy seasons, they don't have these unrealistic expectations.
It's kind of nice to hear that they, you know, in corporate America terms, that they've got you having a good work-life balance.
Yes, and that's exactly what it is.
But I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I mean, it's been really fascinating, Dave, to sit here and hear your journey throughout everything. And, you know, you mentioned at the beginning how you've enjoyed following my adventures over the last decade and a half. The feeling's mutual. I've really enjoyed following your journey from Vermont to Florida to Sioux Falls. Now we live in the same state, even though we live 8 hours apart. And one thing I'll add, you know, about Dave as a person, when I got married last year, he had come back from a really long trip the night before, got up the next morning and drove 8 hours down to Metro Detroit so that he could be there for my wedding. And that's something that I won't forget. And I certainly appreciate.
Well, I felt bad. I just saw the ceremony and left. I was really tired, but I didn't want to miss it. I thought it was really, really cool just to, because you've spoken so highly of Ellen, and just to see that you're like, man, this girl's like my best friend, and just see you guys, you know, kind of really, you know, cementing that bond of your friendship into more. It was just, I didn't want to miss it.
Well, that, I think that says a lot about you as a person. And I look forward to us getting together, you, me, Ellen, and your family at some point soon. And again, it's really been interesting to hear your story. So thank you so much for the time.
Excellent. And appreciate it, my friend. We'll be in touch.
All right. If you enjoyed the Jag Show, you can subscribe in Apple Podcasts. You can also find us in Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and the new Google Podcasts. You can follow me on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. My name there is Jag in Detroit. And also, I create and produce podcasts for businesses. If you want to get into podcasting, whether you know nothing or a little bit or a lot, I can help you out. You can find out more on my website, jagindetroit.com, or you can send me an email, jag@jagindetroit.com. So until next time, later.